to smoke about this time of the day. And all this is keeping me to where I can't go do it. Now, I'm gonna go do it.
Well, hello, and welcome to a new session of About This Time of Day, a Teen Mom podcast, where we are living in 2009 and would like to stay there. My name is V, I am your host, and this is a show where we get a little high and talk a little Teen Mom. In this session, we will be discussing the last girl of Teen Mom 2 from 16 and Pregnant that I care to discuss, and that is Kaylin, aka Kale, like the vegetable, but spelled differently. It's like K-A-I-L. Trust me, if this name were on the Teen Mom baby name game list, it would be very low. This session's companion strain is a little something called Last Supper. I picked it out because I thought it might be appropriate for the last girl in the 16 Pregnant franchise before we get on to talking about that Teen Mom 2, which I know y'all are so excited about because I am. Last Supper is a flower. I'm making good on my promise to bring back a little flower into the mix. It's definitely more earthy than I expected given the smell of it. And the smell isn't too strong either, but it gets me where I'm going, and it definitely is dank and squishy, so I'm happy about that too, not dried up and, like, crumbling between my fingers. I hate that. Kaylin's episode description reads, Kaylin's mom left her pregnant daughter to move in with her boyfriend, forcing Kaylin to move in with her immature boyfriend and his family. Lost, she reaches out to her father she's never known for help. Ooh. And what a treasure trove her father turns out to be. So there is a lot to learn about Kaylin right off the bat. She lets us know in her introduction that her mom lives in a hotel with her current boyfriend. Her father left her when she was 6 months old, and he has never been back in the picture. And now she's trying to find a place to fit in with her mom, her mom's boyfriend, and her mom trying to find a job and do whatever it is that her mom does. Since her mother is staying in a hotel room, there's not a lot of room for Kaylin. So that's where, as you heard in our description, her quote-unquote immature boyfriend comes in. And I say that because in this episode, yes, he may come off very immature, and certainly during Teen Mom, too, he comes off immature. But Joe is one of the guys that we have to watch because he's going places. He's going places. Joe's family is generous enough with their home and their space to allow Kaylin to move in with them. She and Joe already share a bed, so cool.
Nothing else worse can happen, Mom.
And we do hear how important Joe's family is to Kaylin. She says right in this intro that Joe's mother is like a second mother to her since hers is doing God knows what, and she's gracious enough to let her live in their house. Kaylin makes mention that since she and Joe are sharing a room, that it's gotten pretty crowded and pretty tense between them sometimes, but it's only going to get more intense because she's pregnant. Are you guys saying it with me at this point? She's pregnant. That's right. Thank you. The very first scene we see of Kaylin, Joe, and Joe's family sitting around the dinner table seems to be a little bit more tense than Kaylin's introduction would have us believe. Very first thing Kale's voiceover says in this first scene is, Joe and I used to talk about everything, but ever since his parents invited me to move in, we barely talk at all. Okay, barely talking at all and being tense and crowded are two totally separate things, so this just got turned up a notch. Joe, Kaylin, and Joe's family are sitting around the dinner table, and it seems like they're trying to have the obligatory 16 and pregnant, what did you think when you first found out Kaylin was pregnant? And Joe just seems like he doesn't want to be there, and not in the way that Ryan seemed like he didn't want to be there, where Ryan seemed like totally just checked out. You can tell that Joe is present in the conversation. He just doesn't want to talk. He's uncomfortable discussing how he found out Kaylin told him that she was pregnant. And it kind of defeats the purpose of the whole fucking scene, don't you think? So you see his mom trying to prod him. Oh, you didn't believe it, right? You were in denial, right? And then he does give a few answers here and there. But it's clear that it's super strained in this scene, in the very first scene. The conversation at the table continues, and Joe's mom, Janet, asks, "What other options did you consider for this baby?" Kale says that her mom suggested abortion and that she knew her mom would suggest abortion, so that's weird, I think, because she says it so matter-of-factly. It's like, yeah, I knew she would, so, I'm like, oh, geez. So that's the kind of person Kale's mom is, okay? Just a heads up. But then Joe's father, Eddie, asks her, almost kind of confrontationally, what made you decide to keep the baby?
So what made you decide to keep it and have the and baby for yourself and take care of it?
She didn't like the idea of adoption.
I mean, it's good. I wouldn't be able to do it. Did you want to look into adoption more? And you didn't say anything?
Yeah, I did, but...
Translation, maybe I did. I don't know.
Well, you have to understand the reason for that is because this is going to be a very difficult thing to do right now is having a baby, going to college, going to school.
I think things will get worse before they get better, and eventually they will get better.
Things are not going to get worse. They can't get worse, sweetie.
They can.
How are they going to get worse? They better not get worse.
Things can always get worse.
Joe's being really negative, which makes it worse for me.
Now that is a jam-packed 30 seconds, 45 seconds. Whoa. Firstly, I want to address how very accusatory Eddie, Joe's father, sounds when addressing Kaylin in this way. Like he's about to bully it out of her. Like, why did you make the stupid decision? That's kind of what I'm picking up here, and I don't like it at all. And it kills me because I typically like Joe's parents, but again, looking at the show critically and having to tell it to you guys, it makes me see things a little differently, and I really don't like the way Joe's father is coming off here. And then we have Joe, kind of, sort of, admitting to Kaylin that, yeah, maybe I would have preferred adoption, but, What the fuck are you talking about? This very much seems like the response of somebody who is under pressure to respond a certain way. He's not going all the way and saying that, yes, I did want to consider adoption, because chances are he probably told Kaylin something completely different when they were talking to each other all the time. And now his parents are in the room. He knows that they thought that she should have chosen adoption. So he's kind of stuck in the middle and is just going to go the, well, maybe I did, I don't know. Do you know how fucking maddening that is to women? I used to date somebody like that. I used to date somebody who would only tell me in the heat of an argument or in the middle of something else that, well, I actually felt this way about that and I completely lied to you the whole time. Why the fuck are you doing that? Why don't you just tell me straight up the first time and we wouldn't be here right now? Why the fuck is he doing this at the dinner table? I get that this is not a comfortable conversation and it was probably going to come up anyway, but this weird middle ground that Joe is trying to play pisses me off. And then, on top of all those other things, we have Kaylin making a very astute observation that things could always get worse, as we saw from Janelle, or will see from Janelle. And now here, we have Kaylin saying herself, I think things will get worse before they get better, but they will get better. Eddie retorts that no way. No way could things get worse. And then when Joe agrees with Kaylin that things could get worse, her voiceover comes in and says, Joe's being so negative, which makes everything bad for me. What? Girl, you just said that things are going to get worse. Maybe that's an editing thing. Maybe that's not actually what she thinks, but I don't know. Oh, that was a stressful 30 seconds. Oh my God. That scene transitions to Kale and Joe on their way to the store to pick out some baggy clothes for Kaylin to wear. She doesn't want to tell everybody at school about her pregnancy and is trying to hide it as best she can. Only a few close friends know, but not the entire school or anything like that. She's trying to stay out of the hot gossip. After their shopping trip, we see Kale back at home studying for the SATs, which she says are the next day. The MTV story editors use this time to have Kale's voiceover tell us that recently her estranged sister found her on Facebook and added her, and it's been making Kale think about maybe reaching out to this estranged sister and asking about seeing their dad. After that slight diversion from the main story to the I wonder what my long lost dad is doing story, we pick back up with Cale attending the SATs the next day. Now, for having just gone out and apparently bought baggy clothes, she goes into the SATs wearing thin sweatpants, so not like the baggy sweatpants, like the kind that stick to your thighs, and I'm like, why did I buy these? She's wearing those, and then a normal t-shirt that is actually kind of tight on her. And then her voiceover says, everybody's staring at me, I can't concentrate on the test, this 5 hours feels like forever. By the way, anybody that took the SAT, can you fucking believe we sat there for 5 hours in a proctored exam? Fuck that shit. Oh my god, I hate college, I'm sorry. So, bottom line, Cale is not having a good time at these SATs. And I thought, you know, it might just be anxiety, might just be in her head, you know, because I'm trying to get control of my anxiety and think of all my distortional thinking. And I think there was probably a lot of that happening with Cale here. But MTV sets it up so that it looks like when they're back home after the test, Cale and her friends are discussing that very subject, just how many people were staring at Cale during the exam. Now, it's hard to tell from their conversation if they're talking about the exam itself that they took that day, or if they're talking about just in general. They make a lot of references to girls at school, when she goes to the bathroom, how people just stare at her, and it's obviously some kind of purposeful staring if her friends are noticing it in this situation. Now, were people staring at her during the test? I really couldn't tell you. The scene carries on to later in that evening when it looks like they're just finishing up dinner around Joe's family table, and Cale is talking to Janet, Joe's mother, about why she's choosing to wear baggy clothes. Janet comes in the clutch here with some serious pep talk.
Are you hiding in your baggy clothes?
Kind of.
Why? Are you afraid of what the girls are saying? Why? You're not ashamed, are you?
No, but they're mean.
Kale.
What?
You don't have anything to be ashamed of.
No, I'm not ashamed, but they're like mean, like they were talking about me today, and like they don't even know me and stuff.
Exactly, they don't know you, but they feel they have a need to talk about you. Do you understand that?
Yeah.
Listen, you're special, you're smart, you're beautiful, and you're pregnant. And guess what? You're gonna do it. You're gonna be fine. Okay? You trust me?
Oh my god, can Janet be my mom, please? As we come back from commercial from that heartwarming scene, we're met with Cale's voiceover saying that she's still having a really hard time hiding her pregnancy, so she wants to talk to a few of her friends who already know. Okay, we've said multiple times before that if you don't want someone to know your secret, do not tell anyone. If people can visibly see you're pregnant already and you are trying to keep it a secret, tell no one. Tell no one. There are four fucking other girls in this kitchen besides Cale. Four other women who know about Cale's secret, and you're trying to tell me that the whole fucking school doesn't already know? Cale herself gets a dose of reality from her friends in this moment.
Well, I think, like, it's gonna start to, like, really pop out soon, so, like, I'm not gonna be able to hide it anymore.
It's not really being hid.
Sure it is. No, I just look fat right now.
No, you're pregnant.
You're pregnant.
No, I know I'm pregnant, but I'm saying I don't actually look like I'm pregnant.
No. As a friend to a friend, you are pregnant.
I'm still in denial.
I know.
That music kills me. Oh, I guess I'm still heavily in denial about myself and how I look pregnant and how I actually am pregnant and how the whole school totally doesn't already know. Like, you just breezed over a huge fucking issue. Obviously, as viewers, we see that maybe when she was trying on the clothes at the store, she did look a little bit more fat than pregnant, but I also think that she may have been earlier in her pregnancy in that scene than she is in this one, and whatever continuity MTV is trying to push together here. Regardless, we have a girl who is deeply insecure about her position In deep denial about the way she looks and this weird reverse body dysmorphia, which may be her brain trying to protect herself. Maybe she's not completely ready to accept that she is in this situation because the time where she's becoming a mother, her mother is so absent. I could see that being a huge trigger for her. And maybe this is just her brain's way of coping. You know what? I'm just fat. No one would guess that I'm pregnant, even though I told four of my friends, as we casually discuss it over pizza, that I'm pregnant. It's hard for me with Kale because she is, spoiler alert, the daughter of an alcoholic. And any children of addicts are going to have very specific behavior that is not inherently their fault, but obviously their responsibility to take care of. And we meet Kale in this situation as a young person who still doesn't understand that aspect of the responsibility. So she wouldn't know to maybe seek therapy for these thoughts and this denial that she's having about her pregnancy. It's really neither here nor there, but it's just, I want to take that moment to comment on Kale's upbringing and what this denial, which on the surface may be funny to a viewer, which I totally get. I laugh at completely inappropriate things all the time. But the sociologist in me and the person who watches way too many crime and intervention documentaries says that this denial may just be protecting her psyche from a reality she can't emotionally handle yet. Almost as if MTV knew I was going to make that mommy connection. The very next scene, we see Kale being picked up by her mommy, and they go shopping for baby furniture, which you think sounds nice, and it is on the surface, but you get to the baby furniture store, everything is extremely expensive, and it looks lovely, don't get me wrong, this is some sturdy-ass baby shit. No strong-ass baby is gonna break this crib, So they're looking over all of the great options they have, and Kale gets down to brass tacks, which I recently learned is BRASSTACKS, not brass TAX like I thought it was. Kale asks her mom, but what are the prices? The question is, what's the price? And Kale's mom reassures her, no, price is not the question. So the viewer's like, oh, okay, maybe she's got money and we don't know it. Maybe she's not as bad as Kale's kind of making her out to be so far in her voiceover. No. Kale's voiceover comes in and says, price is the question because I know Janet and Eddie are going to end up having to pay for it. Oh, okay. Susie, Kale's mom, plays that game. Throughout that entire time between Kale being picked up by her mother, them going to the store, and then the two of them returning back to Joe's house to discuss the furniture with Janet and Eddie, we hear Kale's time with her mother being interrupted quite a bit by Kale's mom's flavor of the week boyfriend. Kale's voiceover says that no matter when she seems to spend time with her mom, her boyfriend always seems to interrupt it. Now that's a fucking creepy, jealous asshole if I've ever heard one, as long as Kale's not exaggerating, of course, which I think at this point we can probably say she's not. Kale and her mom do go back to Joe's house to discuss the furniture with Janet and Eddie, and Janet and Eddie say they're trying to stay within the $900 range, and Susie tells them, oh, these are really more in the $1,300 range, which is met with a, Yeah, what do you say to that to just kind of end the conversation? Especially if they know that Janet and Eddie are going to pay for it anyway, or end up paying for it anyway. How presumptuous do you have to be to really be like, oh, 900? These are really more in the 1300, so that's kind of what I'm sensing is implied here. Ugh, it's just scum of the earth activity. In fact, while trying to make her exit, Susie refers to her boyfriend who's been calling her like four times already. Kale says that she doesn't care about him, which doesn't faze Susie at all. She says, oh, well, I do. Janet starts in at that point saying, look, Kale misses you. She just wants to spend time with you. Susie half-heartedly offers to come back over on Sunday, whatever that means, but ultimately doesn't really appear to stay too much longer with Kale in that situation. Something Susie says here as she is trying to leave really has always stuck with me as I've gone through my teen mom journeys over the years. I'll just play it for you quickly.
She misses the hell out of you, wants to spend time with you.
Mm-hmm. Absence makes the heart grow fonder, so let me leave.
I'm sorry, what? You're saying that to your daughter? That's usually something you say to, like, a lover who's getting on your nerves. You don't say that to your fucking kid. Absence makes the heart grow fonder? Are you fucking kidding me right now? And then MTV makes it look as if she asks immediately after that, "Wanna walk me to the door?" Nah, bitch, I don't wanna walk you anywhere. I'll walk you to the fucking trash can. How about that? How about I do that instead? Man, and Kale's not happy about it either. She closes the door behind her mother and says, always concerned about her boyfriend, making it abundantly clear that this interaction did not go well in Kale's mind. And honestly, I don't think it went well for us, the viewers, either. What a fucking bitch. In the next scene we see, it is now October, and Kaylin is going pumpkin picking with one of her close friends. They have an innocuous talk about how it's so different now that she's pregnant, blah, 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 blah. Kale complains no one invites her anywhere. Her friend asks if she's going trick-or-treating, and Kale says no, which I think gives you the answer to that. After that scene, there's a very brief cut of Kale looking on her Facebook and seeing if she had a return message from her estranged aunt. I said sister before. It is not her sister. It's her dad's sister, which would make it her aunt. I apologize. I don't feel like going back and editing that, so I appreciate it. She reads the Facebook message from her aunt, and it turns out that her dad wants to invite her to Texas, where he lives, to meet him and stay with him for a while and just kind of get to know that side of the family. She seems really excited, and she says it's a big step in that direction. But considering what she has to work with at home, family-wise, I think she's willing to take her chances in Texas. After that brief scene, we cut to seeing Kale and two of her other friends, one of which was with her at the pumpkin patch, now carving those pumpkins and discussing how excited she is to be going down to meet her dad. Kale talks about being nervous and saying, well, what if we don't have anything in common? Her friends reassure her, oh no, you'll have something in common. He's your dad. Solid logic, even though they could lead completely different lives in totality. Kaylin does say that there are other relatives down there that she wants to meet, obviously the aunt that reached out to her via Facebook. She says there are some nieces, I believe, so I guess her cousins, and I think one other person. So there are other people down there for her, people that she can meet and get to know and hopefully form a strong familial bond.
Familial
bond. That scene ends and an animation on the screen tells us that it's now November and we see Kale appearing to be lugging up some laundry up the stairs. She yells out to Joe and asks if he can help her and he doesn't answer. Kale's voiceover at that time tells us that it's very hard to share a room as a teenage couple. She always feels like she's invading his space, but she has nowhere else to go. Joe's inability to answer Kale's request for help sets off a chain reaction within the household where it seems like everybody's getting involved in whatever conflict it is that Kale and Joe are having. We see Kale folding some laundry, a lot of which seems to be Joe's clothes. So she's not just doing her laundry, she's doing Joe's laundry too, and that dude doesn't answer her and walks away from her when she's trying to fold them? That seems strange to me. I don't really like that because it's clear that she's trying to help out as a person in the household, not just a leech. So it would be great if Joe could show us that he's a little bit more than just a guy standing in a room, like he's ready to be a dad and a potential husband, because that's kind of the idea that I think we're seeing here, so he needs to be more cognizant of that. After Joe leaves the room where Kale is folding the clothes, Janet comes in and Kale lets her know, we don't even talk anymore, referring to Joe and herself. And it's just really upsetting to her. And then the next thing I know, Eddie is behind Janet in the doorway. So now they're both talking to Kale about whatever is going on between her and Joe. And ultimately, Kale says, well, you know what? If it's going to be this way, I don't have to stay here. I can go somewhere else. And at this point, you know, she's crying and still folding the clothes. But After Janet and Eddie both say that they won't be able to deal with the two of them bickering with each other after the baby arrives, Eddie says that he'll go down and talk to Joe and see if he can't try to straighten this out. Well, that's good. At least he's trying to recognize Joe's role in whatever tension there is between the two of them. Not necessarily what I was expecting, but I'm glad to see it. Next, we see Janet and Joe in a different part of the house having a conversation, and Eddie comes in not too long after.
Kale's in a very sensitive situation. You have to be a little bit more receptive and understand.
Yeah, so do I. I do understand. I don't...
Okay, but why won't you talk to her? You go walking right past her. You don't even say anything to her.
Okay, what is there to say to her?
What is there to say?
Are you gonna...
Okay, I'm trying to help her out.
Are you helping her out?
So she's not a single mother?
Whoa, that kid has a lot of fucking balls to say that directly to his mother, who was also a teenage mother with him when she was young. Oh my fucking god, like he's doing some sort of favor by sticking around. What? It really irritates me, specifically because it highlights just how optional fatherhood seems to be for men, or at least how that attitude was perceived in 2010. It's like, yeah, I mean, I could always just jet. She should thank me for sticking around. I'm sorry. You can fuck right off with all of that bullshit. If a woman chooses to raise a child on her own, that is one thing. But in no way, shape, or form is fatherhood ever optional for the man, because, you know, as you're about to hear, it is not just her choice to have the baby.
That's not helping her out. I'm sacrificing a lot, like, and all she does is complain.
Well, you know
me,
what?
So
it is your responsibility.
I guess I don't need to be here.
Excuse me. It is your responsibility and your duty to sacrifice, because you are the father of that child.
It was your decision to make.
Yeah.
Her decision.
Oh.
Her decision, Jonathan?
Hold it. Joe. You're rolling the wrong way. You really are. The wrong thing to say.
Her decision, Jonathan?
Don't say that. Ain't right, bro.
No, it's not.
I decided to keep the baby because that's what she wanted, and I'm going to support her on that. I'm not going to just leave her with the baby by herself.
It takes a lot more than that. You have to have some type of emotional and physical involvement in what she does and what you do. The both of you together. Because you have to get along. Whether you stay with her for the rest of your life or not, she's the mother of your child. You're going to have to live with it for the rest of your 18 life.
18 years plus college.
So you hear that? I really like how Janet and Eddie kind of jumped in on him the second he tried to say, oh no, this is all a girl thing. This is all her issue, her decision to keep the baby, obviously her decision to get knocked up, obviously her decision to have sex with me, you know, and all that good stuff. They're like, no, no, no. Change that thinking right now. And by doing so, they're trying to instill some sense of responsibility in him, which, if you ask me, is probably one of the most effective attempts at that I've seen so far in the series, at least during this podcast. Joe still pushes back. You still hear him come back with, well, she's always complaining about me, and it was her decision to do this, and I'm not going to tell her not to keep the baby, blah, 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 blah. But his parents stay firm. And you can tell by the look on his face if you're watching that before he says that, the wheels are starting to turn for him. And I think that him continuing to talk back and to push back on them is more of an adolescent attitude kind of thing. Because remember, these are still just kids, just like with Leah, you know, she was trying to take a hold of her senior year. I feel like Joe here is still trying to be that rebellious, angsty teen who doesn't think that anything his parents say is correct. Well, unfortunately for you, Joe, your parents are spot on, right on the money with this. And whether you want to stay with Kale or not, because honestly, the way he's talking about her and their interactions that I see on screen are super tense and super cold, and they are just kind of bickering. So I don't know what that whole deal is, but either way, Joe has to shape up his attitude, and I'm really happy to see Janet and Eddie doing that here. You don't see that enough on the show. When we return from commercial break, we see Kale and Joe in the OBGYN office, and they are getting ready for a sonogram appointment. I don't think this is their first one, but I think it's one of the first ones where they're really going to be able to see the baby, so it's an exciting moment for both of them. Even though it is a little tense before they go in, once they're in the room and they see the baby, they're both smiling, and you can tell it's more of a lighter, happy moment. Kale has already said that she doesn't want to know the sex of the baby. Joe disagrees, but for the time being, they're moving past that. Later in the scene, we see them back at home discussing everything with Janet and Eddie, and they're holding up the sonogram pictures near Joe's face, his profile to be exact, and matching up exactly how similar the baby and Joe look. And it's kind of hilarious because, yeah, it's just a sonogram and it's essentially just kind of a blob in front of you, but you can totally tell some similarities if you're watching, and I think if you're a woman, but I don't know, it might just be me. The episode continues and we see Kale getting ready for her trip to Texas. Before she heads out on this venture, she meets up with her mom to see if there's anything else she might need to know before meeting the F word.
The F word? My father. Oh, that F word.
And wouldn't you know it, Susie is just not the best resource for encouragement.
Is there anything that that you want me to know before I leave?
Know about what?
Just anything, like my dad.
Well.
And let's not use any negativity here.
I'm going to just say it like it is. Don't expect a whole lot from him.
When I don't.
But I'm just telling you ahead of time, don't expect anything from him. It's totally up to you. You want a father-daughter relationship, that's fine. Please don't come crying to me. I don't want to say I told you so. I don't want to go there. I mean, he's going to promise you the moon and the stars and nothing.
But he hasn't done that. He tells me he can't do much for me, but what he can do, he will do.
Right.
Okay. So a couple things. Of course, Susie's, well, don't come crying to me if he disappoints you, is pretty harsh. That's harsh to say to anybody. I try my best never to tell people not to come crying to me because you totally can, unless it's something that I like vehemently disagree with. They're seemingly okay with this idea of Kale going. Susie isn't telling her, well, you're gonna be sorry. She's just letting her know, don't expect that much. And I think because of her history with obviously Kale's father, maybe she doesn't want to be brought further into that perceived mess than she already has been during the history of their relationship, which we really don't know anything about, so I can't really comment on. But it's interesting that Kale goes out of her way to say, but he's not promising me anything. He says he can't do much for me. The things he can do, he will, and what he can't, no big deal. And Susie says, well, right. Which to me says, he can't even do that for you. Whatever he's telling you, he will not be able to do for you, which I think as a teenager, you wouldn't understand. You maybe wouldn't hear that and think, oh, or maybe I'm just looking too critically at it. But personally, I would take that to mean he can't even give you the littlest of anything. So have fun in Texas. Ugh. The scene transitions to later that night when Kale's back at home talking to Joe about her upcoming trip. Somehow the conversation goes from discussing the trip to the hypothetical situation that Joe and Kale would break up and she would have to take the baby to Texas with her, but Joe would then sue her for custody and win in court. I'm not even joking. That's literally how the conversation goes. She is just talking about this trip with her dad. Joe says, well, it might be good, you know, it might give you more options. And of course, you're like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? And Kale is thinking the same thing and proceeds to ask him. And Joe says, well, you know, if we break up and you have to move down there with him. Oh my fucking God, who's even talking about that? Who is even talking about that right now? No one said anything about that. She's trying to work through this scary situation with you, Joe. And for whatever reason, you're bringing up a hypothetical custody battle? Because then the conversation continues to where Kale says, you would really be okay with me taking the baby down to Texas? And Joe says, you wouldn't be taking the baby with you. She's like, but I would. And he says, take me to court. I bet I'd win. And gets up and walks away. Kale does say, why do you have to be so negative? But he doesn't answer her before he gets up and walks away. What a weird dynamic. Trust me, dear listener, he grows out of this, and I am so fucking glad he grows out of this. The scene transitions once again to what the viewers are made to believe is later in the evening. Kale's voiceover says that she wants to talk to Joe about how he's always trying to check out, and when he's not, he's always very negative. But instead, Joe wants to go pick up his friend and, I don't know, take him home? It just says pick him up, but it's implied that he's going to hang out with him for an unknown amount of time. Kale is not happy about this. Once again, the entire house is in a tizzy because Kale and Joe are having an argument. Kale tries to follow Joe out of the room as he decides he's going to pick up his friend, and Eddie meets Kale on the stairs while she is crying, trying to explain what's going on. Kale gives him the rundown through tears, saying that I want to talk to him and spend time with him. He wants to go hang out with a friend. It's so much, and I feel like it's so petty in this situation because I feel like Joe knows better and could make better decisions. And I also feel like maybe the family's overly involved, but also it's almost as if you have siblings fighting. You're going to intervene and maybe play judge or something. I don't know, this dynamic is exhausting to me. The viewer now sees the downstairs of Joe's house with Eddie suddenly having a drink in his hand, so I don't know if we missed some more time here or something, but now Janet is out asking, what's the problem? Joe says nothing to either of them and tries to walk right past them, which Janet is not having.
Joe!
What?
Come here. You have some going on here you need to attend to. It is your responsibility. Finish your business here first, be a man about it, and then you go do whatever the hell you have to do.
She gets upset over nothing.
Because
like, I'm coming back.
Because apologize to me and you're leaving. I haven't spent time.
I'm coming right back.
No, you're
I don't
not.
Understand.
You just told me you were going to hang out with Carlos. And why is he so important that you can't fix things with me first? You always put him first. You never put me first
what
in front
the
of
are you talking about?
Exactly what she just said. You
I put
you
first.
You were going to work things out with Kale, spend time with her. That's all she's asking for. She don't ask you for nothing else.
I live with her. What do
but
you
we
mean?
Never
but
out.
You're never together. You used to hang out with her all the time.
I'm telling you as your mother, what you're doing right this minute is not right.
What do
you
want
have
me to
do?
Go to sleep with her right now? Like who?
No, can? That's not what I want you to do.
I work at
you
night and I stay.
And you never
work,
hang out
and
with
I go to sleep during the day.
You're always you told him you'll give him a ride home?
Yes.
Knowing that you had a responsibility here today, I think he can walk home tonight too. That's ridiculous. Come on. Are you leaving?
It's hard to make out, but Joe does respond yes, and it's made to look as if he does leave the house. We don't see him necessarily driving away, I don't think, because we cut directly to Kale, who is crying in their shared room by herself. Not long after, Janet comes in to comfort her and soothe her and tell her, no matter what happens with you and Joe, Eddie and I are always going to be here for you. Which is incredibly gracious. All of that standing up for her that she just did, and all of the abdicating that Janet already does for Kale on a daily basis, I'm sure. I hope Kale understands that this is not typical. It is very unusual that you would have a mother so often kind of giving her son a what for in the face of his girlfriend. You know what I mean? It's just not how you typically see these kind of interactions play out. And I really think part of that reason is because Janet was a young mother herself. And I don't know how her baby daddy treated her or how that ended up, but she is not going to let Joe be any kind of a delinquent father or inattentive father or absent father, and obviously is not going to allow him to treat Kale in such a poor manner, or at least to the point where she's crying every night or most nights. Again, it's an exhausting situation. I can't imagine living in this house with two teenagers, one doubly hormonal, and then they're fighting and there's drama and this girl doesn't have a family anyway. The whole thing, oh my gosh. Janet is a queen, if you ask me. She is a goddess among women and deserves all of my admiration. After their argument, Joe never returned home that night and was not there to see Kale off to the airport the next day as she left for Texas. Janet and Eddie took her to the airport, dropped her off, wished her well, and Kale was on her way. We see Kale in the airport after she gets off the airplane, and we see the first moments where she meets her dad at the terminal. It's pretty exciting, but it's still obviously not a magical moment, at least not to my perception. Kale meets her dad, has her hand over her face, and is just looking very excited. Her father is shorter than she is, which is cool, kind of stout, and wearing a red plaid shirt with a baseball cap on. His hair is very long, not super long, but long for a guy in Texas, I would think. And if you asked me, my first thought might be, what's the PC name for a redneck? Regardless of my perceptions, Kale seems excited, so I'm going to be excited for her. Kale and her dad head back to the car, and we see their small talk conversation on the drive back to Kale's father's house. The ride there seems okay. They're making jokes and keeping it light, but Kale's voiceover says as she's walking into his house that she's just now realizing how much of a stranger he really is. Honestly, I gotta say, that's kind of a jarring statement. He really is a stranger. At this point, they've only really exchanged Facebook messages and maybe talked on the phone. Otherwise, he's been completely absent in her life since she was 6 months old. That is an incredibly long amount of time in which he could be doing anything. I'm surprised that she's staying at his house. I kind of thought she might be staying with her aunt that reached out to her over Facebook, or however that relationship started, maybe a little bit more comfortable for her, since it really just appears to be her and her dad in a house by themselves. That's a little awkward. And it gets a little bit more awkward when he kind of shows her around.
There's a kitchen and in the backyard back there. Can't see nothing out there right now.
Why is this locked?
We had $200 worth of meat in there, and I don't like sticky fingers. So I put that lock on it.
That's weird.
Is that weird?
Yeah.
Oh, well. I broke that chair the other day, by the way, but it's okay. You say it ain't gonna break. You ever go to one of them roadkill things up there where you live? You know what I'm talking about?
Roadkill?
They'd have, like, elk, porcupine, bear. You don't know about them?
Yes, dear listener, you heard that right. He's referring to eating roadkill, and no judgment, you do what you gotta do. I'm just flabbergasted at the idea that they were making football jokes and talking about Dunkin' Donuts in the car, and now his topic of conversation is, hey, do you eat roadkill in Pennsylvania? What? What kind of leap did we just make here? Do we really think we're on that level to where we can talk about that kind of cuisine habits? Maybe it's really just that old hat for him and ingrained in that culture of where he is living to where that's something people do. And again, no judgment, that's fine. But he's not really thinking about, this is my daughter from the north who's 17, 16 years old, pregnant, and hasn't seen me in how many fucking years. Let's talk about roadkill dinners. That'll break the ice. Oh my god.
This is really awkward. We have nothing in common. But I came all this way to get to know him, so I have to try.
Is this what it's like in your house all the time?
Do what?
Is this what it's like at your house all the time?
Yep.
Did you ever think we were going to actually meet in real
life? Yeah, I knew one day we would. Just didn't know when.
Do you plan on being around when the baby's born?
The only drawback about that is you don't ever know when it's coming.
I think you have a vague idea of when the baby will arrive. And also, there are phones and Facebooks and letters, and a bunch of different things used to communicate such important news as a new birth in the family to which you can be present for either before, during, or after. So clearly, we're already seeing Susie's prediction come true. He's already backing out on commitments he hasn't even made yet. It's clear here to me By not committing to being around more after the baby's born, he's 100% not committing to Kale. And then that makes me wonder, why did you even agree to have her down here? Why did you agree to host her and keep her in your house, only to be like, yeah, this will be nice for like a few days, but good luck with your baby, never talking to you again. That's very much the feeling I'm getting here. And now I'm just confused, and I feel bad for Kale. And I honestly do feel a little bad for her dad, too, because, yes, he's 100% a piece of shit here. Do not get me wrong. I do feel like I shouldn't defend him because he is such a piece of shit, and I'm not even trying to defend him. I just feel bad because it's so obvious in these moments where Kale's like, so is this how it is at your house all the time? That she's looking down on him. And I'm sure he can sense that she's looking down on him and his lifestyle. So in that aspect, I pity him, I guess. I don't feel bad for him necessarily. Yeah, we'll say that. I pity him. But goddamn, you never know when a baby's coming, so how am I supposed to be there for it? No, you fucking idiot.
Do you think you'll be around more often now?
This is not exactly the father-daughter reunion I was hoping for.
Hi, Janet. I don't want to come home.
Kale did end up finishing her entire trip down to Texas, which I think was maybe 4 days, 5 days. I'm not totally sure. The next time we see her, Eddie is picking her up from the airport in Pennsylvania, and she is heading back to their house, happy to be home. She does say to Eddie that it wasn't what she expected, and she probably won't go back. However, her voiceover does tell us that she thinks the time away was really good for her and Joe. We see the two of them sitting at a restaurant, happy, both smiling at each other, something I don't know that I've seen this entire episode. As the scene continues, Kale's voiceover tells us that she's scheduled to be done with high school before the baby is born. So that's really good news, one less thing that she has to worry about. But she is taking on the extra stress of trying to apply for college, which, hey, more power to her. College fucking sucks, but if you can get through it, go for it. Initially, she was supposed to take a tour of the local college with Joe coming with her for support, but unfortunately, Joe got called into work and can no longer go with her, so Kale tries to call her mom for support and to invite her on the tour instead. Something that for other daughters of other moms would probably be a given. Oh yeah, I'll go with you as long as she's not tied up with work or anything like that. But since we know she's in between apartments and jobs, that shouldn't be a problem, right? Kale calls her mom from the car to invite her to the tour, which she is already on her way to. So, clearly not giving a whole ton of notice. Noted, I get that. But Susie's reason for being unable to go is that she's in the middle of an important application that's like 75 questions. And if she stops now, she'll have to start all over again. And Kale is clearly trying to tell her over the phone, well, I just didn't want to go alone. I'm not sure if I'm going to know the right things to ask. Very natural things for a daughter to ask of her mother. But Susie clearly cannot be bothered. Kale says, well, good luck, I guess. And Susie says, okay, sorry. Super half-hearted, obviously doesn't really care. And Kale hangs up the phone and starts to cry in the car. It really sucks that she has to come back from a uncomfortable trip meeting her dad to a reminder that even back at home, she doesn't have a biological support system. That's tough. And it's tough because she keeps going back to her mom and perhaps expecting something different. And as we see here, even in the most mundane of requests, Susie cannot be expected to fulfill. So, Kale's kind of stuck, and it's not a fun place for anybody to be in. It makes me feel bad for her. In the car, Kale and Joe discuss the different things that she might want to ask, and Kale goes in and starts the tour all on her own. And honestly, it might be scary, but girl, there's a lot of shit that you're going to have to do by yourself in this world, so I'm sorry this is how you got to learn that, but it's true. Kale takes the tour with the administrator, and it looks like one of the student guides It seems like a great place. They have a fitness center and a great dental hygiene program, which is what she wants to go into. And at the end, there's actually a super sweet and emotional conversation that Kale has with the student aide that's there helping with the tour. Kale asks if there are other students with babies, and it just so happens that this person helping with the tour has a 2-year-old son herself. So the two of them talk a little bit about the different struggles that there are with having a child and still continuing your education, but end up connecting in a very emotional, motherly way about how this woman's child, it was her complete strength in going through college and getting where she is today. And Kale asks, "So you're doing really well." And the girl agrees, absolutely. For where she started to where she is, she's doing really well. And I think that just gave Kale a lot of encouragement and a lot of faith going forward. Not only is she excited for this new venture, possibly going to college, getting into a dental hygiene program, pretty exciting, but also she has this validation that it can work for her. She can do it. And really, there's nothing standing in her way. And what a great realization to have, because that night, her water breaks. After 11 hours of labor, one epidural, and one desperate plea for support,
"Hold my foot, Joe!"
little baby Isaac Elliott was born on January 18th, 2010. We celebrate you, baby Isaac. Happy belated birthday. Let's see where his name ranks on the Teen Mom baby name game.
Teen Mom baby name game.
Well, guys, I have got to say that I don't think this one is going to be quite so difficult a decision as these have been in the past for me. Definitely, Isaac Elliott is an extremely strong name, an intelligent name. You name a kid Isaac Elliott, you're asking for him to be just totally smart. And Isaac really is. He's a bright little kid, and I freaking love Isaac. He's one of my favorites, for sure. And his name is one of my favorites, too. I think that I can safely put Isaac Elliott at spot number 4 on the Teen Mom Baby Name Game. That ousts Aliana Hope, who held the spot for one session only. I'm sorry, Aliana. Drops Jace down to 6, Aaliyah Grace down to 7, Baby Carolyn at 8, and Leah Leanne at 9. Oh, Leah Leanne just cannot move up. I feel bad about that. We still have Aubrey Sky at number 1, and Sophia Loren number 2, Bentley Cadence number 3. And guys, since that's the last episode of 16 and Pregnant for this go-around, that's the final numbers for the Teen Mom Baby Name Game until they have more kids. So, congratulations, Aubrey Sky at number 1. Ah, I just love that name. I do still regret the spelling. We could use a Y in there, but that's fine. And Leah Leanne, I'm sure someone will come along to maybe move you up a little bit. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but we'll get there, I'm sure.
Teen Mom Baby Name Game.
Isaac is born, presumably happy and healthy, into this world, and a few days later they're able to take little baby Isaac home. What we see in the following scenes is something I think is a little bit new to us here at about this time of day. I don't think we've encountered this before, and I'm not sure we've seen it on Teen Mom yet at all, which is two people actually parenting a child at the same time. I guess Macy kind of did it, but Ryan, I don't think you can really count him as being there, so it's not the same time. But here we see Kale getting up with the baby, Joe getting up with the baby, Kale getting up with the baby, Joe getting up with the baby. Both of them are tired, both of them are sick of it, and I'm sure we're about to see a fight here in a second, but I just wanted to comment on how unique the situation seems to be. I don't see a lot of intervention from the parents, like Janelle with Barbara. I don't see them arguing, no, you go do it first. It seems MTV is showing us that they're kind of having an equal role. Wow. I thought I would come back and have to say, ooh, I spoke too soon, and maybe I did. But there is a small argument that occurs, and it's about Joe, who had left the milk out, I guess, and I'm not sure what that means, but apparently it's a big deal, and Kale is upset about it. I'll let you listen to the audio. I don't think there's a lot going on here, honestly. I think these are two tired kids who are sick of each other. who have spent too much time together. I will say Kale's voiceover did say a little bit ago, they're stressed out, but what you see is them taking equal parts, helping with the baby, so I didn't think it was that bad. And then you hear this.
You left the milk out again. What? No, Joe. You really pissed me off. Thanks for that, Joe.
As Isaac is screaming, Janet comes in, says good morning to Kale, and asks her how she is.
Hi, Kale. I don't want to talk about it. Because Joe left the milk out again.
It's 1 ounce of milk. Just shut the
up. Oh, it wasn't.
About it.
Well, why did you do that?
Kale, it was a mistake.
I don't care.
Shut up. Don't
you do it all the time.
It was a mistake. Shut the up.
Cut it out.
Yeah, but you pay for anything anyway. Shut the
Jonathan, was that even necessary?
You, Joe!
Jonathan, that wasn't necessary, though.
It was.
At that point, Kale runs out of the room and goes to cry on the couch. Her voiceover says that she had hoped that once the baby came, things would get better with her and Joe, but now there's someone more important to focus on. At that point, Kale is shown to go back upstairs to the room. Joe is holding the baby now and asks Kale if she wants to hold him, and she says yes. And that's how the scene ends. And so that's kind of what I mean. It ends okay. There aren't a lot of scars from this fight. Yeah, Joe says some pretty shitty things, like, it's not like you pay for any of this, shut the fuck up. That's stupid, and as Janet said, fucking uncalled for. Well, she didn't say fucking, I added that, but you understand what I'm saying. You really shouldn't be saying shit like that to your baby mama, who's living in the same house with you, who's taking care of your baby, and had your baby. It's just completely inappropriate. And that's where we see Joe still being immature. I don't know if this fight would have happened in broad daylight, full sleep, less stress. And that's what I mean. This is clearly a fight that was birthed from a stressful situation and not necessarily one of hatred. The scene transitions to what I believe is later that week, where Kale's voiceover tells us that throughout all of this stress with Joe and the baby, her mom hasn't been there for her at all. I think what we're seeing is the first visit between them since he was born. Kale and the baby head inside, and Susie is holding him and loving on him and being a wonderful grandmother who is just like shown up, I guess, even though Kale had to go to her. And then Susie starts asking questions about Kale's dad. Does he know about the baby? Kale says that he did hear about it through Facebook. He emailed her and said that he's planning to come up, but didn't give an exact date. Susie responds, oh, like when hell freezes over? So it's pretty clear that she's still not keen on the idea of them talking, but Kale does say that she hasn't gone out of her way to speak to him since she got back, because we saw how well that trip went. And this is really the first time they've had contact since then as well. Kale's voiceover says, it's easy for my mom to criticize my dad, but the truth of the matter is that she hasn't been there for me either.
He loves his Nona. Look at, he's even trying to say it.
He's not gonna say Nona first because you don't spend enough time with him.
Okay.
So you should probably stop by more often. I'm serious.
I understand that.
Like, even if you only come by for like 20 minutes.
Well, that's all fine and dandy, but...
But what?
When there's so many people around, it's hard to spend quality time over there with him.
Are you serious? Are you fucking serious? That is the worst fucking excuse I have ever heard in my entire goddamn life. Please don't tell me you have any more of those.
I can bring him here, but you don't ever invite us.
You'd need a written invitation? I don't think so.
So what do you want me to do? Every time I call, you're like, oh, well, I'm busy. What do you do on the weekends?
You usually work on a Saturday or a Sunday.
You can pass my house on the way home from work.
I don't go that way, though.
But you can.
I can is right.
Damn, this bitch is cold-hearted. Oh, my God. Can you imagine your mother talking to you like that?
And so you'll come by.
Yes, I will.
And you'll help me.
I will. But not on Mondays or Thursdays or even Saturdays, maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
It's becoming more and more clear that things with my mom are never really going to change. It's up to me now to get my own life together.
Oh, but not on Thursdays or Saturdays or Sundays or full moons or half moons or if Capricorn is in the house of Libra. I don't even know if that happens. I'm sorry for you astrology enthusiasts out there. I have no idea. Bottom line is this bitch is crazy. I fucking hate her. Like, you really have a hands-off attitude and not my responsibility type of thing. You've already abandoned your daughter. You've already kind of left her to figure it out on her own. Don't make these fucking empty promises that she's clearly already seeing through by her end voice over there. Seriously. And it sucks that Kale has to learn this lesson so early. It's up to you to get your life on track. Yeah, most people don't figure that out until they're like 28 or maybe a little older. Some younger. And, you know, God bless them. But to have your mom blatantly show such disregard for you is a very hard thing to accept. To see Kale as well adjusted as she is for that situation is pretty remarkable. And I always think about that when she does fucked up shit later on in the Teen Mom season. I don't know. I have a soft spot for people that have to grow up quickly, and all these girls do. Maybe that's another reason why I like this show. But I always think back to this moment where Susie just can't be bothered. Oh, except on Thursdays or Sundays or really whenever it's inconvenient for me. Fuck you, bitch. Shut the hell up. Kale has got to have a lot of gusto to keep going. And we see that Kaylin does have that gusto when we come back from break. Her voiceover tells us that she did well enough on her SATs to get into the community college, which has a daycare for Isaac, so that's awesome. The scene then transitions to Kale and Joe having a conversation about their relationship and how it's changed since Isaac's come around. Kale says that she's glad they don't have time to fight anymore. And I think we know, dear listeners, that that's not necessarily how it works. But Joe says, I think it was more us getting accustomed to living together than it was us actually disliking each other or arguing with each other. And I think there's definitely some credence to that. That scene transitions to Kale and Joe both giving baby Isaac a bath. I don't know if it's his first bath or not, but either way, they seem to be having a lot of fun working together, playing with baby Isaac, and Janet pops in to say, don't forget to wash behind his ears. It's kind of a very sweet family moment. Joe is even rubbing Kale's shoulders as she's washing Isaac. I haven't ever seen that before on this show. Damn, okay. See, that's why I don't hate Joe. He's not the best guy in this episode, and he does teeter a little bit, but I don't hate him at this time. I might have to take that back later, but for right now. Kale's ending monologue goes on to say that she wishes that she would have waited altogether to have sex, but she's very grateful to have Joe's family there to support her. She mentions Janet specifically and says that she's the best mother that she could ever wish for, even though they're not blood related. And at this time, she is welling up with tears, and it's so sweet, and it breaks my heart for her because you see her trying to have this connection with her mother throughout the entire episode, yet we see Janet tucking her into bed at the end of this episode, so.
Janet's helped me through everything. I couldn't really ask for a better mother, even though she's not really blood related to me. She is like my mom.
Get some rest, all right?
Joe's parents are so good to me, and they treat me like I'm their own child, and I don't know where I would be without them. I've had to fight my whole life, so I'm just waiting for things to get easier. I think there's a little light at the end of the tunnel, as long as I keep working hard, probably harder than most teenagers my age. Hard work will keep the light coming, to keep it shining through.
Man, I just love a positive ending. And how about that tribute that Kaylin gave to Eddie and Janet? I love the way they treat her, and their relationship is so strong and pure. I can't imagine anything or anyone fucking it up. At least in this moment, we hear Kale be very grateful and very optimistic for the future, and I think that's a great way to end out the episode. This one wasn't nearly as dramatic, but I think definitely just as compelling as the other episodes. The different relationships going on here, it's interesting to see how they all interact with each other and how they all affect each other. And I'm interested to see where this goes with Teen Mom 2. Well, thank you, lovely listeners, for joining me on another session of About This Time of Day, a Teen Mom podcast. And next time, be sure to join us because we will be finally starting our discussion on Teen Mom 2. I hope you're as excited as I am. I cannot wait. These girls are fucking crazy. Until then, you can catch us on Instagram or Twitter at ATTODpodcast on Instagram or Twitter. That's the acronym for the show about this time of day. On there, you'll just find some fun things like bad art I like to do for every episode and previews of every session's companion strain. You'll also get updates on when the next session will be posted. And as we round out this session, I just want to say I hope all my listeners have had a great 2022 so far, and that all your New Year's resolutions are going as well as they can possibly be expected. You know, I personally try to stay away from them. I feel like they just create opportunities for disappointment. You know, like if I resolve to be a more positive person, anytime I feel negative, I'm just going to feel that much worse about myself. If I resolve to lose weight, I mean, every time I gain a couple of pounds, I'm gonna freak out and feel even worse about myself, and that's not how I want to live my 2022 life. Or, you know, I could resolve to stop smoking as much weed, but I don't think I'm gonna do that.
But you can.
I can, that's right.
Weed?